Oh, yeah, boy, they were shot with cannons too. There was only three kilometers away. You always could hear behind you, and you always said, yeah, the Russians come, you got to go ahead, you got to go ahead, you know. That's when we lost my one sister, you know. See, people used to walk with bunches, you know. We had nothing anymore, just a blanket or what on top of our bed. And they were walking with a bunch, and me and my mother and my other sister, we were walking with a bunch. And see, she used to work for, it's like a kindergarten. She was a teacher in kindergarten. And she used to go with this group. She traveled with them kids and with their mothers and everything. And they got cut off, and we didn't know where they cut off or anything. For 3 days, we didn't find her. And then we said, well, maybe she turns up someday when we come to this destination where we wanted to go. And we had to go cross a bridge, and there she was standing waiting for us. And then she said a lot of them kids died, you know. See, they put them on a train and put no engine on. Mm-hmm. Just let them sit there. Then they came with the bombs and throw bombs, and they all killed. And she got out. She and a couple of other ladies got out. That's what they did to the people. See, the Russians said, well, we'll take you back, we'll take you back. So they put them all in a big train, like a cattle train, you know. Put no engine on. And they came with the machine gun, this side and this side, and they all died. Yeah, we were close, we seen them. You could see the plants, the way they bombed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know, sometimes you wonder how you could go 2-3 days without eating or what. You not even got hungry. You always had this fear in yourself. You had to go ahead no matter what. You cannot stop for, and there was nothing to eat. Wherever we had to go, all the people were gone already. There was nothing left, and it was in winter time, you know, there was 45 below in January, and there was nothing there. We had no more shoes on our feet, and all that. It was terrible.
Well, what did you do during the night? And, you know, did you find
out? Well, sometimes, you know, you came in a little community where you sit behind a barn and cover yourself up with your blanket when you had a couple of hours, and then you hear the roaring and thunder again, and you got up, now we have to go again. See, that's where we left Poland. See, and it took 16 days till we came to Germany. 16 days, you know. So we had to, you know, walk 16 days.
It's a long time to be out there without...
There was a lot of people died on the road. Died on the road. We just covered them with a blanket and walked away.
I imagine it took quite some time then, you know, once you did find your place where you could stay to really
settle
get
down.
Your strength back
you
again
never,
and
you,
settle
I
down.
Don't know, it was cold, but you never could feel it. You're cold. You always had such a, I don't know, was it nerves or was it scare or what, it always urged you to go. You didn't want to settle down, you know. And I know for weeks and weeks, When we listen with them people, you know, your feet always go like this. You always go like this, you know. The nerves, you know, they were just, you always shake your whole thing. You talk, you lay down and doze off, and pretty soon you just jump up, you know. Yeah. That stayed with me for a long time. You always think, is it sure you're safe? Is it sure you're safe? You couldn't believe it, you're safe.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm
you
sure
always
thought,
well, maybe you're not. You're not safe, and then, yeah, it was sad, but,
yeah, it's
okay. I don't know, I said, it doesn't take much imagination, you know, how to pray or what, but I said, I don't know, people walked with Hail Mary, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, they didn't, you know, talk to each other much, and we just Hail Mary, Jesus, Maria, and Joseph, and all that stuff, you know. I think it was just I think they were walking with us, or what, I think so, you know,
yeah,
they were just there with us, you know. And then the food, you know, it was, and then some people had little kids and they died in their arms. And then a lot of girls got raped by the Russian soldiers and they catched them. And they killed them after that.
Yeah, that is something a person just can't never forget when you go through something like that.
And you always think, then I always think, you know, well, it happened at home too. Like here now, like there's a family, they have a little problem, I think, and they think that's the biggest problem in the world. And I said, if people would think, step back, what they would, if they would have to go through what we had to go through, they would think this is a problem.
Right.
And I think nowadays, you know, like you say, well, they didn't get along with each other. Go psychiatrist. I said, I wonder how many psychiatrists we would have to have, you know, help all them. But there's a lot of people lost their mind too. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that all just took too long, you know, and then the hunger
and the scare, where's my brother, where's my mother, got lost, and all, see, that's the stuff,
right.
Who always, you know, like we say, and who, the ones that talk back to Russia, you not even could write, you know, what you were afraid, maybe they come after you too yet,
right.
So you had to sit still and be quiet.
Yeah, that was just a never-ending fear in a person, you know. And
but I wonder, Katie, sometimes how strong a person really is. You can take this off. Sometimes you think that's impossible, but I think we are made out of steel. You know how I know my mother. You know, if it would be for my mom, I wouldn't be here either, and wouldn't be in America either. But I mean, on the way, when we went away from home, she was sitting in the wagon, she was hitting the horses and go ahead, we had got to get her out of this and stuff like this. And I said, she must be had thought, well, she got to save this family no matter what, you know. And she dragged us through and everything, and I said, it takes a mother.
Right.
And when I decided to come to America, it was my mom. She talked me into it, and I still don't regret it. But I said, sometimes, you know, you think, what does she know, so what does she... But I know she knew, because when she was little, not too little, 7, 8 years old, their parents went to Siberia, because they got so much land out there, and then it was so cold, so they came back again. So she knew a lot of that stuff. No, Ma, she's a good one. So, but I mean, it takes a mother to, you know, to guide you. She didn't, you know, she was kind of tough, you know, but you had to be, because she raised us without a father, you know, and then you had to be tough in a communist country. But I mean, the way she said, well, she said, that's not too far to go to America. She said, there's ship for going, you know, she made the boat, and there's the Flugzeug, she said, no, and then she said, and there you can start a new life for you and Marie and everything. She said, here you have to be a maid all the rest of your life. And I thought, well, she's right for once.
Yeah.
So I still, you know, think she was right, you know, I still don't regret it, but I mean, how did she, there was no high school, no college, but she had experience,
and
that's what
right.
It takes.
Experience, and I think sometimes it's instinct from God too, you know, that just kind of tells you what to do. That's how I feel sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I think so too. You have, like you say, she had faith in God, and she always thought, well, maybe that's the right thing for her to do, you know. So that's the way I landed here, yeah. And then when she came over, you know, in 62. Came over, we got her over for a year, and I said, yeah, don't you want to stay here? No, she said, you that's too much open space, you know, too much open space, like in German, there's everything more together, and trees and stuff like this, but she kind of liked it, but she wanted to go back to her friends there.
yeah, she had spent her whole life there now, and you know, her last
couple of years, she wanted to spend it. So she stayed there, but I mean, she was the one who got me to go. I don't know. Sometimes they left when they showed this commercial about that girl, she takes innocent, and she said, I listen to my mom, that's the only thing we agree. I said, yeah, I listen to my mom too. Like when the bishop came, like for confirmation, you know, in town, and then they got him from the train, and then they had the body, and they decorated the body, you know, with flowers and everything. Then they had six white girls, you're all dressed in white, and they made a nice ring with flowers, and then he stepped in this, and that's the way he walked them into the church, the bishop, and then he confirmed, you know, that's the way they, you know, respected or honored, what you say, honor the bishop, you know, and that I remember it, a real good one. I was once along when we had these six girls, you know, and then walked the bishop in. It was real nice. And like the priest too, they had a maid too, you know. They had their own house, you know. They had a cow, they had a garden, they had their own chicken and everything, you know. And they lived just across from the church, and it was almost like here now too, you know. And then when they said masses, they gave him a ruble too, you know, the way, and when somebody got married or died, you know, they get paid too for that. But they couldn't speak out the way they really supposed to speak out, you know. But in the early days, you know, they never had their hair cut, the girls, you know, they always had braided, and then they had them buns around here, and later on they had them on top. And then when my generation came, they cut the hair, and they cut it down here, the sides, but they didn't curl them, they just cut them, you know. And then one Sunday, the priest, he said, the ones who cut the salary too short, they didn't have to come back to church anymore. He called that salary. And that was three or four girls, they had to go up front, stand the communion reel, all through church, because those were the first ones who had their hair cut. But then later on, he got over it, and but then they put some curls in. They had a coloring iron, but you put it in the lamp, in the lamp, and then you curl with your hair, you know. But then later on, they cut them all, you know. But there's a lot of them had braids, you know, and the older people still kept theirs, but the younger ones, you know. There was a lot of them had a shingle, you know, the ones who worked in offices and stuff, they had a shingle.
Yeah, putting the curling iron in the lamp, I still remember that. My mother, when I was little, used to do that.
Yeah, I remember that when we did that, And then we paraded them and we laid them around like just like a cone up front, and I know. It was a lot of stuff. And the clothes, you know, the Schneiderin, you know, she made all the dresses. You go, bought the material, and she had all kinds of patterns. She made her own patterns, and she took the measurement here and here, and length, and she made your dress. You go and tried it on, and then you came and got it and picked it up.
So none of the mothers did sewing for their families really that much?
No, little stuff, like little aprons and stuff like this. But, you know, if you want to have a nice outfit or that, you go to the Schneider, you know, she made it. And like the underwear, we made all our own underwear, the cross and everything. You couldn't buy it. Well, you know, there's a big thing, but not for us. You had made your own, you bought the material. And, each house had a sewing machine. Everybody knew how to sew. And like the furniture, like this china closet, big, You all had it made. They were all handmade. They were there. What they call it, Schlafstube, like a bed and commode, shunk, you know, what they call in this China closet, Klauschunk, and a Esstisch, you know. And this, you went to the ones who made this, to that Handwerker, and you picked all your patterns or your color, Horstquilters, you know. And then he made it for you. You could have good hardwood, or they made a lot from moosebound, you know, from nuts tree. They have that nice grained like this, and that's why they. And when we're a girl, like they used to go 5-6 years together, and well, maybe 2 years before she went with your order, they're bitch dead, what they call it. And then Schlafstube, you know, and then the dining room and the kitchen. Mm-hmm. That's what you ordered all together, made by one man. That's what they do in Germany too.
They still do.
Because they have their own forest, they have their own trees. Mm-hmm. So they go out to pick a tree out, less a lot of wood, what they can take it out for, all that stuff, and then they cut it off and they come and get it and take it to the sawmill and then. Yeah.
Well, then they get, that's a cheaper way of making furniture, than it's actually just the labor of making it for them.
Yeah, well, and then you can pick your pattern out, whatever you want, and the color, you know, some of you is lighter, some of them is darker, and, you know. And like the man, too, if they wanted to have a nice puppy, there was a guy who painted it for him. You know, they had it made, like my dad and his brothers, they made puppies and all that stuff. So they had it made, and then he took to that guy and he painted it all fancy around. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Big stuff like this, that was all glued together or had pointy things in for wood, you know, they never came apart. Like them chairs, they wiggled back and forth and everything.
Right.
They didn't wiggle back and forth or nothing, you know, they had. I know what kind of glue they used. They cooked their glue, lime, they used to say. They bought it in sheets. They put it in the oven and they cooked it when it was melted, just like brown syrup. Mm-hmm. Had a funny smell, but then they had a little brush and they crushed all it, stick it together, and it never came apart. And then the soap, we cooked our own soap too, everything like big lard and stuff, cooked our own soap, yeah.
I suppose there wasn't no such a thing, you couldn't even buy any soap at that time.
No, like in big cities like Odessa or Moscow or what, but people around and all the, even the Russian people, they didn't even use soap. They went to the river, they washed their clothes in the river. Winter, the river flows through and it's open. And they see their clothes, their material is not, it's woven.
Oh.
And it's the coarse stuff, see? And that's not like ours. And so it goes apart. They hit them on the rocks.
Oh.
Their clothes, yeah. That's the way they do it, yeah. Their clothes were all made out of flax. Mm. Flax. It's not flax like we have, different flax. It's that high, and when you cut it off, it's about this thick, and you peel it down like you peel celery and stuff, and it's just like foam or what. And, well, they take it to the factory and stuff, and then they make some thread out of that. Oh. That's what they made their clothes of. Yeah, it was tough, rough clothes, you know. And it was warm. You know, it was really warm. You know.
So that flax grew about 4 feet tall and as thick as your wrist. Then.
Yeah, and then you pull it down with the things, you know, just like you peel it. And then they took it to the factory, to the spindle mill or whatever they called it, and they made yarn out of it. And they bought it then and they made their clothes with it. And the dresses, they were wide. 10 yards.
But then why it's yards?
Yeah, 10 yards, yeah. They were wide, yeah. And they never had stockings or socks on. They had boots on, half boots like here, but they all barefooted. Straw in, and you slept in.
Oh.
See, straw keeps it warm. Oh, God. See, that dumb Russian, well, he wasn't that dumb.
Yeah.
They drink a couple of quarts of wine, and they got warm. They didn't feel the cold.
Now, they always, nowadays, they kind of say, you know, that vodka is very popular Russian drink. Was it at that
it
time
used,
already?
Oh, yes, vodka. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, they made it, and it was cheap. See, it was made out of the corn and stuff. But the people around by us, they just had a regular wine, you know. Like, when we had lunch or what, we didn't have no coffee. Or, you know, we had sigori. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And tea. But when we got older, then we drink wine with our lunch. Before we went to bed, we had a glass of wine. But see, the Russia, they love vodka. Oh, they drink the whole quart down to the bottle away. Yeah, that is popular.
So that the Russians didn't really drink that much wine then, basically?
No, they had more
they
vodka.
Had more,
yeah. Mm. They could take it. The Germans couldn't take the vodka.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They could take it. They're hot-blooded people, you know. They're tougher, yeah. But the Russians didn't drink too well. The Germans didn't drink too much vodka. Oh, they had Zuckerbrein, you know, Hochzischnaps,
oh,
stuff mm-hmm. like this. But not, you know, a little class or what. But they had their wine, and there was nothing added. It was just natural grape wine,
mm-hmm.
that's it. But when it aged, it got a little strong, too. You had to watch out, too. But,
now, did they make it, did they have yeast in those days to, like, to brew the
wine? Oh, no.
Of course, yeast they used to make beer, I guess, I must, or alcohol,
yeah,
I guess,
yeah.
I must be thinking
but
of.
No, see the wine, they cut the grapes and they press it, they had all press it, and there was a wine meal, a wine maharai, you could have it down and they made it for you, but a lot of people made it on. All you do is press it through, and you had your big barrels, maybe, I don't know how many gallons, in the cellar lay it. They stay down there. You carry it down and fill the barrel, not all the way full. When it start beering, it start cooking on its own, because
uh-huh.
There's so much sugar in them grapes. You could go down the cellar, because you would fall down, because just from the foam, from the fume you would get.
Oh.
And when it start cooking, when it cooked off, you know, they sealed it. They put the cork on, and they put wax around. And front of the barrel, they put a wooden faucet. See, and they didn't took the wine from the year they made it. It always went the year back,
mm-hmm.
and then it was every wine what they made stayed a year later, and then they took it out. That was good, you know.
Yeah. I must have been thinking of, you know, of making, you know, alcohol where they used to use yeast, I guess, you know, to start it or something. I don't know what reminded me of yeast.
Well, around here when they burn the alcohol, that's what they use yeast in, or when they make beer, something like this, but for wine, no. And like for us, they never add anything to the grapes, because they were natural grapes.
I wonder if that's how they make it in the big wineries, you know, where they make, like in California, where they make a lot of wine, if they do this the same, you know, like
Ostana.
Yeah,
see, they do too, but see, because each grape is different. Some are more meatier, some have more sugar, some have more water in. That's why them winery adds some stuff, they add some a little, either to the wine, you know, so it. Sometimes you get headache from wine, and sometimes you don't get because there's something added to the wine. It's not natural. It said there sugar added so much percent, see?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they say too, like you leave it laying for a couple of years, and then, you know, the longer it's laid, the better it goes. But the wine was just like you go and drink water out of the faucet, you know. They had white grapes, you know. And then we had the long grapes, shufti, they used to call them. And they were eating grapes. They had no seeds.
Oh.
Now, there's all kinds of grapes. They have all kinds of. And see, there's the grapes who grew in the sand were stronger.
Oh.
And the grapes who grew where the river was, there were more watery. See? Mm-hmm.
They grow up as dry then.
Yeah, see, the sandy soil, they got a little stronger. See, they got more sugar in. And the ones who grew beside the river, they got not as sweet and got more water in. And that was made different in the wine.
Now, did they just use strictly one kind of grape then for each barrel?
Yeah. Because there was real dark ones, real red, dark red wine. And then you got the rosy one, and then you got the white one.
Yeah, I suppose it wouldn't have gotten as good to mix
them. They couldn't mix it up because the flavor wouldn't match. No, each one was its own, you know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And when you sold them, you know, when you cut your grapes, you want them sort like this, and then you unload it here, and the other ones over there. Yeah. They couldn't be mixed up. Had the pail full up, and when it was empty, they went down and got another one. But really, you could drink wine. You didn't get a headache or anything, you know. It didn't hurt you. And I know, like you used to say, you know, well, there was a lot of alcoholics and stuff like that. And I said, well, there's just as much here too now.
That's for sure. Did they strictly drink wine then when they had parties, or did they?
Yeah, there was just, yeah. Because people didn't bought no whiskey, just they're the older people, they had the schnapsel, you know what. But the young guys, why should they buy whiskey when they had the wine? So they And there's a lot of young people who are even my brother, he never drank wine in his life, you know. He was 23 when he went to the army, he never drank. There's a lot of young people who didn't drink, you know. No, I mean, but he didn't drink it at all. He got so sick when he was little from wine, and then he never drank it. There was a lot of young people who maybe had a class the evening, and that's all.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of like today, too. Some will, get too much.
And some of them, they have to have so much to be happy, and
right.
Some of them, they well, that was a lot of, you know, had wine, then they chewed seeds, and then they tell stories, or played cards, or, you know, stuff like this. That was the time passing, what they had, because there was no show hall, or no television, no radio. Well, no, later on, there you couldn't have them on the radios anyway, but I mean, time passed too, you know.
Now, did they play card games like
France and two reggies? And I know there was another game, seven high, to see who the shoulder was on skill. No, no, I never played cards for them.
It wasn't spades?
Kreuz is shoot, Kreuz is the same. No, they had another game, but I know that three or four games they had.
List,
for France and two reggies, and yeah, they. And then, what was that other game they used to play? It's called Maid's Going. Null was for a game. Sie Speine wie Bingo. We played it with beans. We had cards, and then, wie hat jetzt das Kass? Stehen Sie mal auf die Plattkunde. And it's almost like bingo, but it's in also barrel cut and it's a rock cruiser. Oh, we had men buttons, but men wanted used to beans. So that game the girls used to play a lot, you know. Lotus, yeah.
Lotus was the name.
Lotus, yeah. It's in Russian, you know. That's what it was. Yeah. It's almost like bingo.
What, did they have prizes then?
Well, it was just among, there was maybe 10, 12 girls went together and that's what we played.
It was more or less just a pastime.
It wasn't for a, well, we had little prizes, like we bought little combs or a little pin or something like this, real cheap, and then we got the prizes. And like Sunday's afternoon, like we went down to the river, we went ice skating. And they had little slates, but we all, brothers and sisters, they all made their own skates, bought the iron and then made the skates. And the slate went down to the river and we skated till you had the red cheeks like this and ice skate. That's the way we passed Sunday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we did. Yeah. It was on the familia aus Chile, you know, the bigger familia, the more you had to give.
Like for church dues?
For church dues, yeah. But then there they had a problem too. Well, people paid their church dues, but see, when there was rich people and they had people who worked for them, and they talked to the priest if they couldn't eat meat on a Friday. Because, and that was 40 days strict Lent. There was just, not even Sundays, there was just strict Lent. Mm-hmm. Not even Sundays you could eat meat. And this, see, there were them two brothers who had them flour meals, what I told you. And the one got allowed to eat meat for his people and the other one didn't. And the other one didn't. He said, well, if I have to buy that Lent, he said, then I not even cook meat. My wife cannot cook it. But if you can buy it, he said, you go to heaven with it. He said, but I'm not going to church anymore. And they had a big, I think, priest had to go down and talk him in, you know, to. But that one he got allowed, he said he gave the father something, so he got to eat meat with his people, and the other one did. That other guy said, well, I have to buy that land to eat meat, and I'm not going to go to church anymore. But there, you had to cook bean soup and noodles and stuff, but no meat. You not even could use lard, like if you make noodles and you want to fry a little breadcrumbs, you not even could use this lard. Strict butter or cheese or eggs or fish, but no meat. 40 days.
That must have gotten awful tiresome in the end.
Oh, well, and people too, you know, people are poor and everything, and pretty soon there was nothing there, just noodles and stuff, like people got tired of that.
Yes.
Noodles and watermelons, you know, sour watermelons and sour pickles and stuff like that. And people just thought that's just too dumb, you know, they did. And, but then it wasn't changed, you know. Hell, we left and was 40 days and just strict, not a piece of meat, no nothing. No, nothing.
Nowadays, our young people for sure wouldn't listen.
Oh, no, 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 no. No, it was. And then there too, like in Lent, there's nobody could get married in Lent and nobody could get married in Advent either.
I still remember that custom, you know, when my parents were alive, but now it just kind of seems to pretty well fade out.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's, well, I think it's so many people working in different jobs and different companies and different surroundings. I don't know, it's, maybe they had to do the law a little bit like this, but I don't know, maybe they would be still a little more strict, or maybe we should have had a little more faith in church too, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's just not enough. What I said, I have nothing against modern religions, but I mean, at least once in a while you got to remind that we're not holy yet.
Right.
And there is still a lot of room for improvement. Like, it's a sin like that and that, but I think sin is out of style. It's not here anymore. You can find it not in catechism or nothing.
Right.
And I think that's out of style, because they don't even want to mention it.
Right.
Some priests say, if we say it, it's a sin, they don't come anymore. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just not the way it used to be. Now, were the parishes poor then at that time too, or were they able to make ends meet
easy? Yeah, we could keep the church up, but not like here, like there was no electricity in church and there was no heat in the church or nothing, but we could take care of the priest and help. Oh yeah. And like in our community, I wanted to tell, there was about 1,200 souls, that's where they go, from little one to old. That's how big the community was. But then, like, all the saints and congregants, there were bigger communities. But they usually maybe 1,400 or 1,500 people living there. Mm-hmm. Well, each parish had to take care of their own. Like, we had to hire a Schulmeister, what it means, the organist, and he had to teach catechism and at the choir and stuff like this, you know, so we had to pay him too. So, people paid him. I was thinking, you should be honored, you should be proud to be a Christian or a Catholic. And you should do a little sacrifice, you know, I mean, for your church and stuff. I always say, you know, it shows on a person what you are, how you know.
Yeah, right. This is a continuation of some more questions with Helen. From page 1, did you ever find any of your aunt's children in Germany, like Aunt Josepha Mulba in Augsburg?
No, because they bombed everything. We could not even go near Augsburg, so we didn't find nothing out about them.
Okay, page 4. Who were your mother's parents? Give maiden name of your grandma too.
Grandma was Johanna Stahl, and grandpa was Franz Josef Rothiger.
Did they live in Strasbourg too?
No, they lived in Condel. It's about, let's say, 10 kilometer or mile or whatever you want to say. That's where they lived. That's where my mother was from Congo.
Page 4, where did the rest of your grandfather Steve Feist's family live? Did they all of their families go to America?
No, all him and his family stayed alone in Russia, back in Strasbourg. And his brothers and sisters went out to America.
Page 4, what kinds of cookies did your mom make at Christmas?
We used to bake the cookies with sour cream, and they called it Hirschen salts, ammonia in English, and lots of eggs. And the cookies were baked 4 weeks before Christmas. And they were baked, and then they were put in boxes or hanged in sacks up in the attic, and the longer they were hanging, the better they got. It's what they called, and some of them they sprinkled with the sugar, colored sugar, and they called them mar. That means they were kind of crisp, but that's what the sugar cookies, that's what the Christmas cookies were. And they baked some Christmas bread too. Like to put molasses in and sugar, brown sugar, and they baked it in little loaf pans. That's what they did. And then the pretzels, we used to bake the pretzels too, put salt on top.
Do you have any of the recipes she used?
No, they didn't use no recipe. They just all had it in their mind. You take 12 eggs and 6 cups of sugar and a jar of cream and a little salt and a little Hirschen salts or ammonia, and they beat this up and they made the dough, they rolled it out and they had the cookie cutter, and that was the end of it. And they baked it in the big oven, you know, they heated the oven, then they swept it out, and then they put the cookies in cookie sheets and then they stuck it in and baked it. There was no recipe, they just You take a little handful of that, a little handful of that, and you taste it, you add some more, and that was it. When the soup was too salted, and they peel two potatoes and throw it in, and the potato pulled the salt on itself, and the soup was okay. that was all the hints and stuff like this. They cooked by ear, by smell, and cooked a lot with wine too, you know, because they cooked a lot of ducks and stuff, you know, and they cooked with wine.
Page 5. When the mass service watched on the Lord's grave, did they wait and watch inside the church or outside the church?
Inside the church, under the altar. It was a big altar, and it was just like it was a closed door. And in Christmas, you open the door, and then a corpse was laying in, like Christ, you know, like a big human man was laying in, and that was six mass servers standing with the candles, standing there, and they kept, what they call it, you know, on Highlands and Drop, you know, that's what it, no, it was inside the church. Day and night, all 3 days, from Thursday night till Sunday morning, till Reser Auferstehung.
Did they make an actual grave or what?
No. It was built under the altar, but that corpse, that like a statue, that stayed in when Easter was over, they closed the, it was a kind of little folding door or what you call it, that was it then.
Did different mass servers take turns?
Yes, yeah, they served well. They couldn't stand for 3 days, so they had so many hours, and then grown up 17 years, 18 years old served like from midnight till daylight, you know, so for the little one it was too hard, but that's what they did all 3 days.
Page 6, you talk about digging little houses under the house for the Easter rabbit to lay eggs in. Wasn't your house on the ground, or was it on a foundation?
No, it wasn't little houses. It was little holes you dug a little bit under the... No, there was no basement in our houses. They were just solid on the ground. But you dug a little hole out, and you built it like... And you made a little roof on, and then you put grass in and stuff, and then the Easter bunny... The Easter bunny was Ma, you know. And she laid the eggs, and she collared the eggs, and she laid them in real early, and that's, I don't know, we believed it. I mean, maybe we knew, but we still waited.
Well, I guess that's like...
Well, like they said, once there was a lady, and she loved kids so much, you know, and she always told them that story about Christkindl and Easter Bunny, and she had a little dog. So she collared all her eggs, and then she had paint left, you know. Then she made little dots on the little dog, and the little dog didn't like it. He ran down the street, up and down, and kids ran after him. The Easter after the Easter, and they believed it. So.
Page 7, did the common people go to celebrate the government holidays by getting a day off and being able to participate in the celebration or not?
They had to participate. They got the day off, but they had to be there, otherwise they wouldn't get the day off. So that was a must. That was a must.
Page 11. What was your husband Eugene Feist's dad's and mother's names?
His father was Eros Feist, and his mother was Catherine Schneider Feist. She was a Schneider.
Did he have any brothers and sisters, and who were they?
Yeah, he had four sisters and one brother, and as far as I know, they're all in Siberia. There's no contact with them, not at all.
Did his family come from Strasbourg too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where do his family live today?
In Siberia, that's all I know. So that's...
Page 11. Who were some of the other Feist families in Strasbourg besides your grandpa and dad?
Well, there were a lot of them, but you know, maybe some of them even moved out to little towns around or little villages around there. But there was quite a few fights, you know, but I don't remember all the names because I was still young, you know. No, like all my dad's brothers and stuff, they were all fights, and they all lived there. And then they had a lot of sons, and they stayed all there, but that's a long time back, you know. So
it'd be more or less
that'd be
all
more,
relations.
Yeah,
though.
Stayed right there, yeah.
Page 13, if some farmers were rich and had lots of cattle, did they make hay for their cattle or did they just feed them corn stalks yet all winter?
They never made any hay. There is never any hay land. All they did when they threshed, they had the straw from the oats and from the corn stalk, and the oats, they grind it too, like here, you know. And that's what the horses got, and the cows got the straw and the corn stuff. But there's no pasture like here. Just in the summer they put, well, they didn't have that many. 2-3 cows, and that was all. So they didn't eat that much, no.
Page 14, how many trees were there in your grape vineyard about?
Oh my gosh, I don't know how to say this. See, there the land was given out in hectare. I don't know how much a hectare to an acre means in the United States. But if a person had a hectare vineyard, maybe had 1,200-1,500 grape stalks in there. And they were only 2 feet apart and 3 feet in this side, you know. They were straight rows, you know. I really don't know how much they would have. Usually, you know, they had a hectare grape vines, but then the trees, the fruit trees, oh God, you had fruit, they were just piled with each other, you know. You couldn't count them, you know. But I don't know what a hectare and an acre, how that works. Maybe she could figure this out, how much is a hectare more than an acre or different, because a yard in a meadow is different, so I don't know how that would come out. But they all had a lot of grapes, yeah.